Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And we are basically asking for you to make your appeals to heaven. We kind of expounded, I think, a good deal on that. And I think that what we can do here, folks, is do one more thing. We need to start actually, we need to get you, we need to get local efforts moving and creating a constitutional compliance movement. This has to start in your county, because your county legislators are your legislators. They've been stolen from you. We really failed to help define them and their roles. We really didn't do a good job in laying out this hybrid constitutional republic. It's not that the Lord didn't do a good job in giving us the example of what to do. It's just that the implementation wasn't that good. So I've got, this is Feedback Friday, and there, I could provide a lot of feedback regarding Trump, but there's some clarity and some things that are happening that I think that are really critical. And so we'll kind of focus first on what is most important. And actually, I kind of already lent to your campaign begins today. Folks, if you understand the point of petitioning, getting organized, getting the Republican Party, because bottom line, folks, I can't tell you, and I'm going to dive into this probably more in detail, but your Republican Party is set up to fail. It is a laissez-faire party. It has no intention in holding Republicans or any public servant for that matter. What they do is they try to play the moral game, you know, that they're evil and we're good. In a state of law, in the fundamentals of law, it's either legal or illegal. It's not about morality. When we look at abortion and the people say it's immoral, that doesn't matter. It's not legal. And when we say it's not legal, we mean that there's nothing enumerated in the Constitution, the federal Constitution, to let them be involved in abortion or anything like that. As a matter of fact, when it comes to privacy for the Roe v. Wade, the rights to be secure in the persons are clear, that a person has the right to be secure in their person, but there's no such right of privacy mentioned in the Constitution when a person goes into a public establishment, something publicly funded. Now, because bottom line, if the taxpayers are funding something, the taxpayers have a right to know what is going on and how that money's being used. And so there is no right to privacy. Now, we may have created these, you know, keeping the names out of it, but what they are doing and the services they're providing that you're paying for, if they're paying for something that is not within the enumerated Constitution, then it is illegitimate. It is illegal. It is fraud. You want to win, or do you just want to feel good about your position? There's a huge difference here, folks. It's like, do you want to be right or do you want to be rich? If you want to be right, then you can't be rich, because when you're right, there is no way you, and if your desire is to be right, then there's really no way for you to be corrupt. I mean, I talked with Tammy just recently, and I think it's going to be coming up. You know, when we look at a person being able to be corrupted, we all have a price. Well, if you don't have a price and you're going to stand up on principle, because I think there's lots of good people that are out there on principle. They've just been misguided to believe that they lead on their morals because that's what makes them feel good. Maybe they just don't understand the law. And that's probably more due to the fact that we've been told, we're convinced that we don't understand the law. And so how can we, you know, do all of these things if we don't understand the law. Folks, it's not that hard. It's like a power of attorney. Do they have the delegated powers? If they don't have the delegated powers, we've got government in so many ways. I am just absolutely frustrated. I'm watching the state of Washington passing all sorts of laws, and everybody's talking about how wrong these are. These are just immoral. No one is mentioning the fact that they have no authority in the state constitution to be doing any of these things. We have a system today that has told you, and you believe, that whoever is in charge and whoever can get the most votes can do whatever they want. That is not the government that has been set up. So the first thing you have to do is you got to grab whatever is left of your head and pull it out of the hole here and actually start breathing real air. And this is probably more towards your friends and those people who aren't listening. They need to understand by giving them the Constitution. And actually, I was on a call that, you know, goes across different states. And I said, you know, if you don't have your state constitution, you need to get a copy of it. We'll go through it. Bottom line, whenever something's happening, let's just say they're passing a law that is taking away contractors' abilities and actually making it illegal for you to consume natural gas, for you to have a car by 20-something, for you to have a car that runs on fossil fuel. They're passing laws like this, folks. They passed a law that takes away your right to the water on your property. They don't have that power in the Constitution. They've granted themselves that power, but they don't. It's not delegated to them. These are all coming from federal and globalist agendas. This is all a part. And you hear people all the time. And, you know, it really frustrates me that all of these people are running around getting you to react in a way that actually ingratiates them. Buy my book. Get involved. Create a pod. I believe the American Policy Center tells you to create a pod, this little organization. What we need to do is we need to exercise our rights and operate within the context of the Constitution. We don't need to take upon ourselves and get organized into this pseudo-governing system that is autonomous, because if you do that, my friends, you've crossed the line. And actually, because you're not putting your position on supporting the Constitution, you're just combating them. You're combating the immorality, the evil. Then you are actually at risk of being thrown into jail, because that you will be perceived as somebody that is countering government. You have created an anti-government governing body. And that they've created these paradigms of laws to go after you. Look what they did on January 6th. And technically, there was no violence, there was no protest. The problem was that they didn't exercise petitions. When you're exercising your constitutional right to petition government for the redress of grievances, they can make no law that abridges that. They cannot close D.C. down. And as a matter of fact, when you show up and you actually get the progressives, because they're going to be there videotaping you, the progressive media, and they're going to just try, and they'll air all of these things, not knowing what the heck they're doing, because they're going to give you ample video coverage, and they're just showing how foolish you are by trying to demand access to D.C. when they're protecting themselves from you. Don't go into the details. Don't educate the progressives of what they're doing, because if they understand what they're doing and what you're doing, that will not hit the airwaves. They will not play. These things will actually indict them and the government. So let's look at this. Just look at this one case. DC has been locked down, and they've got gates around, and the progressive media is there to record the poor, you know, conservatives who can't get access to demand, you know, their moral agenda. And so all you need to do is just basically say, hey, we're here to petition our government, and we can't get in. Why can't we get in? You don't tell them that you have a right to get in. Don't tell them that you have a right to petition them. Don't tell them that you have a right to assemble, because they don't understand that. But what you can do is you can say, we demand to see our government. Why is our government creating this law keeping us out? Why are they enforcing some rule or regulation to keep us out? And I don't think I'm positive that the news would actually just broadcast how stupid you are. That, you know, they're doing this to protect democracy. The Constitution's clear, folks. Congress can make no law that abridges your right to petition them. And therefore, all of those video clips that went out and went around and hearing these people, had everybody used the right language and say, we're here to petition our government. We're here to petition our government. We're trying to assemble to petition our government. Because when all of a sudden it is aired that they have actually provided you video coverage of the fact of what you were trying to do and how your rights were denied, there's no defense on government side, because it is clear that they locked you out. They created a law that would directly and did directly abridge your right to petition them. It's hard evidence, folks. Because of the illiteracy is so rampant, you don't have to spell things out. You just basically have to basically state what you're trying to do. We want to petition our government. We don't want to protest. Don't use the word protest. We're here to rally. Don't use those words anymore. And actually, don't get out on the streets. By going to D.C., that's okay, because that's the government. D.C. is the government. It is government property. When it comes to your town, your county, then you go, you don't form in a park, you don't create a rally and march down the streets. What you do is you literally form and organize yourself right there at your county commissioner's, board of supervisors, the government seat of the county. Everybody goes into the parking lot, that's government property, and actually you all assemble on the government property. Don't go down. I mean, you have a right to assemble and create petition signatures for so that we can gather and educate and inform. This is a right that you have to do. And you actually have this right when you go to a grocery store, go to a mall, or even, you know, a large parking corner gas station. But you do not have the right to block the flow of commerce. No person has the right to do that. And when we see people getting out into the street or on the freeway, they're blocking the flow of commerce and they're denying you your right. In other words, actually, the people that go and do that are actually treasonous. Now, most people think, well, how can that be treasonous? Look at the Whiskey Rebellion. The Whiskey Rebellion were protests where people were demanding, you know, not to be taxed. And as they got out into the streets and as they actually started carrying this out, where people were being denied their rights. I mean, it's one thing to go and petition government, but when you're walking down the street and you're protesting, you are denying people their right of flowing, the flow of commerce, being able to get to work, being able to go shopping, spend money, make money. This is a natural right. It's an inalienable right for a person to be able to conduct commerce in America, even though it may not be listed in the Bill of Rights. Remember, the Ninth Amendment basically protects all of those rights that have not been enumerated. That the enumeration of any right cannot be construed to deny people any other rights that are not enumerated. Anyway, or the enumerations of government. Government cannot create laws that will take away or actually block or disparage your ability to enjoy these other rights, your parental rights. Does the Bill of Rights even go into parental rights? See, when we go through the ratification debates, you're going to find that they're going to say, who could actually hear among us? Who has the wisdom to identify every right under the sun? Not one person. It's folly. It is the stupidity and the arrogance of a person that thinks they can create a Bill of Rights. Because it is a known fact that as things progress, technology moves, next thing you know, we will find something that I never thought about, parental rights. That was just so sacred. That was just, they didn't even think that it would ever be in this position today where parental rights are being taken. This is why they created an enumerated constitution. So we can't focus on these rights. We have to focus on what's enumerated. And so when we actually call out, because on January 6th, had they actually put a petition in, which we already did before they even got there, Bob Schultz actually went down there. Bob and I forget the these two patriots of the We the People Foundation. They got down to D.C. because they didn't have access. And so because they couldn't get to the Capitol. So they actually found this satellite office if you needed to communicate to the Capitol what to do and so forth. And once he found out what and how to do it, they had great help in, you know, assisting them in getting these petitions. And they had a written document that said everybody, every congressperson received their petition. I mean, they had a copy for every congressperson. And on January 6th, it's sad I have to go through this, but on January 6th, before they convened, on January 5th, on Monday, they had already, by that point in time, had received this petition. The petition basically stated that the Electoral College was unconstitutionally formed due to laws being violated by governors, secretaries of states, and jurists in 31 states, only leaving 139, something like that, legitimate electors, where there was not adequate electors, legitimate electors, to actually choose the president. Therefore, the 12th Amendment had to be exercised. In other words, on January 6th, what they should have done and what Pence, the treasonous Pence, should have done was to, because they received this petition, they were told precisely what had to be done constitutionally. They had to reject the Electoral College. Therefore, they had to move and act upon the 12th Amendment. That's what they had to do. And Pence and the Speaker of the House moved forward with the progressive agenda in actually taking and receiving the Electoral College and then pushing forward. And actually, technically, if you remember, they really didn't push forward. They had to do it behind doors. And that's how they seated unconstitutionally Biden. The last 4 years have been all done unconstitutionally. Everything that was done in the last 4 years that Biden had to sign or in anything that was executed from his office was all unconstitutionally done. So the fact is that had Bob, you know, been there or had anybody understood what the heck was going on, there's no doubt in my mind, Tony was the guy, Bob and Tony. And so there's no doubt in my mind, folks, that had Bob been arrested, there's just no way they would have even tried to try him, because if he had a lawyer like these other guys had, Bob would represent himself, and Bob has represented himself, and there is no way they would have prevailed. With the congressional investigation, the indictment should have gone towards Congress. Congress denied him his right to petition government, denied him his right for actually the right of redress, because Congress had to redress it. And actually, on January 6th, Congress failed to do what they're supposed to do. They actually violated their oath by actually accepting an unconstitutional. It was their duty to make sure that the Electoral College was constitutionally formed. So this is why the lawsuit went on. It went up to the Supreme Court. So I didn't want to necessarily get into this, but this is the whole point, folks. If we're doing the right thing and we're placing constitutional context, not conservative, not good morals, not, you know, that we're being a good, righteous person, We have to keep and think in the legal spectrum. And I'm telling you that if you're thinking and operating within the legal spectrum, the lawyer's eyes are going to roll out their heads. They're going to just roll right out of their sockets. And the same thing with the judges, because they don't know the Constitution. They have no clue what is constitutional or not. They live within their own little paradigm that they make it up as they go along. And they try to hide behind unconstitutional statutes and the color of law. Oh, well, they denied everybody access. Okay, right there, you just proved by denying access that they created a rule and abridged our right by enforcing that rule that we could not have access. This is why standing on the law is the way to move forward. Now, let me actually get into a few things that actually came up. First off, we've been talking about the corruption and how, you know, literally corrupt this government has been, and Stacey Abrams and this billions of dollars going into Georgia under I think it's under the environmental protection clauses or what have you, some vehicle that they, you know, funded for green efforts or what have you. This is a shining example of how corruption works within government today. They're basically paying off, and this is what Obama did. Obama paid off all of his constituents, and it was just interesting that they all had these little startup companies with solar wind panel or, you know, with solar panels and or windmills and what have you. And so all of this money was sent out to these people like Kaiser. I forget the organization's name, but I remember the gentleman's name was Kaiser, and they went bankrupt. They received millions of dollars, and he walked away pocketing a lot of that. And they just went bankrupt. This was out of billions of dollars. Billions of dollars were going out. And so, sorry about that. And so as we start looking at, you know, how corruption really works, what they do is they pay off and support these loyalists that help them get elected. And they're getting more and more. More and more of these loyalists are organized and operating throughout the United States, and they're being funded by your tax dollars. This is what's coming to light. And so what they're actually doing, what the government is actually doing, is this is like a RICO organization. They're actually supporting criminal activity. Hope you understand this. This is all criminal. The federal government has no enumerated power to even be doing these things or even using these unconstitutional channels to send money out. But that's what they're doing. Now, when we look at, because there's a reason for this. When we look at the 40s, you know, our government and how it was spending money and what it was doing, there was definitely some unconstitutional shenanigans being done. I mean, Congress, I believe in the 40s, we were doing what we could to stop the communist revolution in China. And Congress, I think, allocated a certain amount of money to go to the aid of those who were fighting the rebels in China. And actually, I believe if you read A. Ralph Epperson's The Unseen Hand, he exposes what the heck happened, where there was a block, or basically that money wasn't sent, and I believe it was the president that actually withheld that money. One of the things I know is, and I actually got this from the tour, Fort Myers tour of NSA, and so I need to go into this afterwards, but this actually came out in an unclassified tour, because every once in a while, if you go to the NSA museum, they'll actually talk about certain things, and these things become unclassified. And so the people that give you the tour are usually old employees that either have retired, they just kind of come back and talk about, you know, a little bit of history and so forth. And so I just want to share what was actually said at the NSA through this tour that I just happened to, you know, let me go check out Fort Myers and let me go through this. And this was under the Venona Project. We'll be right back after this. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so when I went back up to Fort Myer on my own to go through a tour, and they had pamphlets on the Venona Project. The Venona Project was like one of the very first projects that NSA had. Now, NSA at this point in time was a bunch of good patriots, and they had this great capability of receiving communications, those types of things, if you understand NSA. And so President Roosevelt basically charged them, and I think there's, I don't want to play the politics of who gets the credit or what have you, whether it was really NSA or the Army or what have you, but anyway, the president basically created this project, and I think he did this because he was pressured. You know, had he not done this, basically it would have been perceived that he didn't care whether communist operatives were operating within the United States and acting within the United States government. And so the whole point was to find these communists who basically had infiltrated, you know, either government or operating directly with government employees and so forth. And there was these, some like 200 some odd, I want to say 250, something like that, that were government agents or working directly with government agents. Or not agents, like spy agents, you know, actual employees, government people. So anyway, as they were going through, because they were tracing down and identifying who was who, and they were placing names, and one of the things they realized that there were all, you know, most everybody was operating under code names. And so they started, also they found out that there were a few that actually were operating under their own open, under their own name. And FDR was watching this, and as a matter of fact, and there's some banking involved in all of this as well. If you do the, if you kind of Google and go into the Venona Project. And so when you look at the end of the Venona Project, it ended when one name came out. It was a single name. It wasn't a full name. It was just basically the first name of a woman, and her name was Eleanor. And when FDR saw that name, it didn't play out like, Eleanor, oh no, just shut this thing down. It was reported, and he went off and came back, or actually he got with his entourage or whoever was the Joint Chiefs of Staff, whoever it was. He basically pulled them aside after that and said, you need to shut down the Venona Project. And it was literally scuttled, and it was highly classified. It was tucked away, and it finally came light of day under guess who? Under Bill Clinton. And so the guy that would, you know, told me this story basically was talking about how successful this, you know, the Venona Project was, and how it indicted, and actually, if you actually do the research, you'll start to find that there's more supporting evidence that Eleanor was a agent for communism, whether she was a U.S. citizen or not. And this actually speaks to, you know, how far down the line McCarthy was, and how to this day he is being vilified for trying to root out communism. Now, there's these snapshots, or I should say these sound bites and so forth, where McCarthy's going off. But I'm here to tell you, my friends, that communism attacked, or I should say America was infected with communism directly by a direct effort to take over our education system in the late 1800s. And so what does this have to do with anything? It's all about evil and corruption. Because one of the things that's interesting is, and this is why I read that Billy Graham letter earlier about commitment. When you become an ideologue, it's like Christianity. Have you ever met a Christian that, you know, really claims to be a Christian? They walk like a Christian, they talk, and they engage you as a Christian. And as a matter of fact, they basically, you know, they want to make sure that you're Christian, and that they try to surround themselves with Christians, and they try to avoid evil people, people that aren't Christian, people who have not come to Christ, and accepted Christ. So anyway, born again, right? And so as we look at this corruption, and talking about Stacey Abrams, how we have been permeated, it has gotten so out of hand, and we have all of these different vehicles, Health and Human Services, the EPA, we've got, you know, labor, we've got education, we have housing, on and on and on. So as I look at what was really happening, there were key people in the 30s and the 40s. Most of America was impervious. They had no clue what the heck was going on. All they knew is what they were being taught in school. They went and, you know, lived a fulfilling life, had family, and you just tried to make ends meet during the Depression, during the 30s and going into the 40s. And then all of a sudden, towards the end of the 40s and the 50s, it was a heyday. I mean, everybody was doing great. As a matter of fact, the average household had only one income, and everybody was doing great until they started getting us away from the gold standard. And by the time we got to the 60s, this is when lifestyle started to change. Even though the average family could still sustain itself with a single income, more and more families were being stressed because inflation. They were slowly increasing. And how did inflation happen? How did they actually, you know, stoke the flames of inflation? By injecting welfare programs. This happened in the late 50s, early 60s. They started offering money. As a matter of fact, they started providing these benefits that if you were an unwed mother of children, you got more, you know, support from the state, from the government, and so forth. And the federal government was backing all of this. So as they pumped more and more money into people, this goes back to this whole concept of sin and basically embracing this stuff. In other words, when we look at government, right, and we basically, it starts by removing the consequences of sin. This is how evil permeates into a government. It tries to remove the consequences of sin. Now, in days of old, you know, they just tried to remove the stigma. Oh, there's nothing wrong with that. But actually, in America, in our modern day, our government went out of its way to basically try to cure any and all venereal diseases, just like AIDS today and so forth. They've, you know, ran into walls and say, wow, this is tough. And they've spent how much money has the government spent on trying to fight and counter AIDS, which was plaguing the homosexual community, as well as the intravenous drug users and so forth? Because, you know, and when you look at the source and all of this, we could easily get into the history, but what's important is the federal government had no responsibility. That's not within the Constitution for them to fund, you know, the ending of venereal disease. As a matter of fact, you know, the consequence of, you know, having casual sex means that you could get a venereal disease. But if the government can actually say, hey, that's okay, we've got a shot for that, you know, that's no big deal. It's about removing the consequence. And in so doing, this creates the embellishment of sin. See, you don't have to worry, we got you covered. Child out of wedlock, abortion, or welfare. Doesn't matter, you know. And actually, what ended up happening as we, you know, started downplaying, you know, marriage and all of that to single wed mothers and so forth. And they knew over time that the data would actually be daunting, where, you know, the children from, you know, especially boys even, that are being grown up by a single mom, you know, without the father in the home, without that father influence. Now, just to go back, you need to read Ward Connerly's, his Fight for Equal, because he talks about how insidious this welfare program was and what it was doing and how it was basically pillaging the black communities in America. And so both from the abortion side, because where were the abortion clinics? They were right next to and within the black communities. They weren't putting these things up in, you know, rural, you know, communities of whitedom or what have you. They were actually, the plan was by Margaret Sanger, this was a part of trying to reduce the population of blacks in America. It was basically a form, and it was under the initial steps of eugenics to basically kind of root them out from America. That was Margaret Sanger's plan, and it was FDR that kind of ran with that. He actually set up Project Negro. Anyway, as we go through this process of what government does regarding sin, they remove the consequences, then they embellish the sin. They basically say, you know, it's okay. We've got you covered. Then once society is all, you know, that, hey, everybody's doing it, it becomes enshrined. You know, it's just the norm. It is a norm. Once they hit the norm, it doesn't take much longer to get to a point where it is emboldened. It is not just, you know, we're not just able to do these things. We now have a right to do these things, and we have a right to be considered just like, you know, normal families, what have you. In other words, it becomes emboldened, and in so doing, this is when the right, or I should say, when we look at sin and evil, becomes good, and those who look upon sin and evil as bad and try to promote good, they are viewed as the evil ones in our society. We've literally reached that point a long time ago. When did we start reaching that point? It was 90s, 2000s, even though it wasn't a majority. At that point in time, when we look at, you know, like marriage and how marriage has basically gone from a woman and a man to basically allowing anything and anyone to be married. As a matter of fact, I believe there was a gentleman who married his car. The point is that they have been attacking the family. They've been attacking the mores of society. And your mistake in trying to take this stand in defending the family was wrong. Their mistake, maybe it wasn't yours, but their mistake was trying to defend the family. What should have happened was the obvious, because you know what I'm going to say. The counter to this whole movement of basically ingratiating addictive behavior, evil behavior, whether it is drugs, whether it is gambling, it doesn't matter. If it's addictive, they want to promote it. And government is helping this. Look at all the casinos going up with government, federal government, in supporting and ingratiating the Indian tribes to doing these things. So, back up a little bit. Had the argument been, you have no enumerated power to do this, this would have stopped when we looked at the Department of Education and its growth and its entrenchment, eventually its entrenchment in our society. We could have stopped it. But instead, we looked at using, this is just wrong. And as a matter of fact, what they did was they got people to support this concept of every, you know, all children need to be educated. Yeah, and that's a very compassionate thing. But when government is starting to use these arguments for compassion, it doesn't take long for them to actually use, you know, pull them into their breast, you know, kind of tuck it under their arm and then start stiff arming you and actually start basically pushing an agenda where they now use the education system in weaponizing future generations to actually do things. So again, what I was trying to do is I was trying to create this, you know, this view of a timeline in America. When we kind of look, and this is why I explained the Verona Project, because the government had been, compromised. The government in the 30s had been compromised. There were communists in the White House. Now, Obama was a communist. As a matter of fact, he was directly associated with communists in Washington State, Hawaii, and so forth. His father was a communist. His mother was a communist. Anyway, so we go through the 40s, the 30s. Actually, we can go even further back to the 20s. You know, Wilson was a communist. Teddy Roosevelt was a communist. He loved the idea of Marxist theories of economics and this government statist control. Now, as we kind of move incrementally through and we look at the evolution of the revolution, in Russia, the evolution of the revolution started in the 1860s when the Tsar emancipated 22 million serfs and slaves. In so doing, he basically castigated, you know, these two classes of people, serfs and slaves, from the property owners. Now you're all free to go. You don't have to be subjugated. You are now free and no one can legally hold you. This was great, but they didn't have a job. They had no money. They had no ability to support themselves. It forced them into a lot of tragic and bad decisions, because now they had to react to this noble idea of emancipating people and actually basically start getting them out to starve to death. And it even got worse and worse and worse. As communism grew and statism grew in Russia, it got worse because look what Stalin did. He killed millions of people. Now, it wasn't in the millions, but there were people that were living in communal efforts. And this communal society was reading Marxism. They started, and it took 60 years, basically, for Russia to be finally established. It started in the ranks of the communal living. Now, in America, it started in our education system. So this was a very methodical undertaking in trying to basically and slowly and gradually move America from this constitutional republic into what we have today, where we're just absolutely corrupt and controlled by globalists. Globalists need America to believe we have this paradigm of liberty. However, they've taken everything from us. They basically have their fingers on almost every string in our society, from our currency, laws, government, and so forth. So as I'm looking at the history and we look at how things transpired from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, why those 3 years or those 3 decades, that's when the counterculture revolution started organizing. That's when the counterculture revolution exploded. And the results of that, they were doing all sorts of research. The CIA had all sorts of programs. They were on steroids in trying to figure out how to manipulate people. The Milgram experiment, so forth and so on. There's a whole litany of these things. And so when we look at what was going on, the counterculture revolution was basically saying, hey, we got to tune out and tune in. And so, you know, basically get away from government and this established idea. Those people who led that movement quickly in the 80s and 90s started shifting everybody to go back to government as socialism, because the whole point was that we didn't need government. We could live in a communal society. And now, as everybody accepted the idea of a communal society, now we want government to give us that instead of capitalism, instead of this cruel world where things aren't equal. You see my point? So we can see how this evolution slowly, because in the 1880s is when the Fabian Society, these teachers from England, came over and volunteered, and they quickly got jobs within the our higher education system. The Ivy League schools, I believe Berkeley was one of them. Harvard was definitely one, Yale and so forth. And they actually started creating societies. Now, we know about the Skull and Bones Club, but if you look at the Fabian Society itself, it was a secret organization. And they started creating secret societies within the education system. And it didn't take long, because who was attending the education system of old? In those days, it was the people that actually had money. And so the elites, they knew what they were doing. The elites in society were basically being taught that, you know, here's how we're going to move forward, where you're going to control everything. Because you will have access to the banks and the corporations. And everything was laid out and prepared for this new world of kings. And these kings are evil. They weren't elevated by the people because of their righteousness, because of their nobility, because of their, you know, their compassion and service. It was a very cold and hard-hearted world that actually created this. You look at Bill Gates. I mean, this guy is scheming to kill us in every way he possibly can. That's their job. Their job is to deploy such a pestilence and disease-plagued world that billions of us die. I don't like going through histories and these types of things. However, it is incumbent upon me to do this every once in a while so that you can understand how easy it is, by using the law and demanding compliance of the Constitution and starting at the county level. We actually have good people in the county. They have no idea that they're even being corrupt. They're just doing what they're told. So we need to make sure that we convert those who are convertible by petitioning them. Those who can't convert, we take over and change. You know, I would be way ahead of this. We all would be way ahead of this if people like Semi Bird in Washington or other, and I'm just using him because I need an scapegoat. So I'm going to be hard on him because he refused to try to create a movement. He believed in the old status quo. So in other words, he didn't care about what was right. And that's the key. If you want to be right and if you want to create a movement, because see, Semi Bird, had he done this, he may have lost the initial election, but had he won by creating a movement in the next election, there would have been such a movement, because had he become the champion on the Constitution, he would have overwhelmingly won. You got to remember that we approached him about a year and a half before, actually it was 2 years before the election, 2 years. It's kind of a short period of time to grow a large movement, but we could have actually done this by using the county, these red state or these red county Republican parties, creating a symbiotic link between the parties and the commissioners and so forth, because the structure exists, folks. The faster we can tap, the faster we can help them understand how they're a part of the problem. And they just have to, all they've got to do, these county central committees, they only need to make a turn to the right. And to the right is the Constitution. Get rid of your platitude platforms. Get rid of your do no good bylaws. And demand everybody take oaths, demand everybody be held to the Constitution. Eventually, we'll get to a point where your state will be so emboldened in the Constitution that it will start removing citizenship from those people who are actually waging warfare against the Constitution. Now you're taking away their ability to vote. Now they don't have any dog in this fight. And these ideologues, these hardcore ideologues, are going to try to come back fighting. And we deport them. The states have the power to do these things because the states have the power to control immigration. Actually, I've got to get in contact with IAPAC or whatever they are. The producer kind of sent me this opportunity, and I've been meaning to send back a response because they're completely clueless how the states control immigration. Well, because anything that's not delegated in the federal constitution is left to the states. That's the 10th Amendment. Show me in the Constitution where the federal government has the authority to control the immigration of people going into the states. Right? I mean, it's one thing if the federal government is going to have immigration going to D.C., but that doesn't mean that those people can actually go to the other states. And actually, the people could actually say, no, D.C., you brought them in. You got to keep them. Don't let them get out. Because if they get out, we're going to deport them and we're going to bill you for it. Because you brought them here. Folks, the states are in charge. The counties are in charge of the states. The people are in charge. Let me back it up from the very groundwork here. We, the people, are in charge of the counties. We create the counties. We need to actually take our counties back by demanding compliance of the Constitution. Once we've got that, once we've created these constitutional compliance committees, then we can actually start doing some real miracles in the county, where we're going to create a county constitution. And we're actually, by the time we're doing this committee, there'll be other committees started, because if you read these petitions help basically guide everybody through the step of broadcasting so that everybody in the state, all the county commissioners in the state, are aware of this. And in so doing, by another means of communication, the party that's itself, if it's doing its job, it is actually broadcasting to all the other counties, hey, this is what's happening and this is what we're doing. We need to get there. And the problem I have is I'm working in a very blue state, and I'm dealing with people that just don't understand these things. And those of you who have been listening to this show since 2018, folks, 2018, 7 years. So, or actually 6 years, I'm going on my seventh. So as we look at how to do this, we can do this, and you can do this with the petitions. We've got a lot of petitions. We're going to be doing more. We need to add more. But what's more important, and actually let me do one thing, because I didn't do this. I wanted to do this in the very beginning. A gentleman from Oklahoma, Mr. Neiman, reached out, and he gave me the names of his representatives. And I thanked him, and I'm absolutely touched that there's people like Neiman, that are out there that are, you know, trying to do something. I want you to understand that for me to communicate to your legislators, it's only two, that is nice, but it's not adequate. I need, when I send these constitutional minutes, when I send these constitutional messages, it needs to go to your entire legislature. I need your entire legislature's email address. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to email Mr. Neiman, and I'm going to, you know, basically actually send it to his senator and his legislators. So I'm going to do that. But bottom line, folks, I need your help. I'm G.R. Mobley, Reclaiming the Republic. Can you hear me say, I need your help. I need to get accurate legislatures' emails of your state. Send me your entire state legislature's email list. If you need me to give you a sample, I'll give you one so you can see how I need it. But if we do this, then we'll be able to start poking these guys in the eyes. I'm G.R. Mobley. Again, we're Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.